que nuestras clases por videoconferencia tengan la misma velocidad e intensidad que una clase en el aula. En tan solo un par de clics podrás acceder a la plataforma y empezar tu clase. Y recuerda, prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿A qué esperas? Entra ahora en grupobaugan.com/clases videoconferencia. Fácil, cómodo y muy eficaz. Sigue poniendo en forma tu inglés.
Lo que más miedo le da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso, Baugan ha desarrollado sus clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Baugan 100%.
Infórmate en Barcelona en el 933398687. En Madrid 91-133-5833.
Hello, I'm your Vaughan telephone class teacher.
Ah, Platón, amigo, déjame hablarte de la paradoja del ejecutivo con el lengua.
¿La qué, Aristóteles?
En el futuro, todas las mujeres y hombres importantes de la Tierra necesitarán comunicarse en la misma lengua para prosperar en sus trabajos, o de lo contrario, no podrán ascender y obtener grandes ganancias. Esa lengua se llamará inglés.
Ajá, lo comprendo, querido Aristóteles, pero sus trabajos y el quehacer cotidiano mantendrán a los hombres y a las mujeres ocupados. Y no tendrán tiempo de aprender el foráneo lenguaje. He ahí la paradoja.
Este es tu máster. Infórmate llamando al 91-133-5833. Y recuerda, también disponible en Valencia y Barcelona.
Hey guys, are you sitting around your home just wondering what to do? Well, why don't you sign up for Vaughan's English class via video conference? That's right, now you can have the best teachers in the comfort of your own home. You'll get personalized attention because there's a maximum of only 6 students per class. Give us a call, 91-133-5831. Learn English with Vaughan via video conference classes. Sign up now.
Prueba el método Baugan con nuestro curso trimestral. Elige entre nuestra modalidad presencial o por videoconferencia. Y el resto, déjanoslo a nosotros. 3 meses de listening y speaking con los mejores profesores del mercado. Entra en grupobaugan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Baugan. Para más información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833 y te ayudaremos con lo que necesites. 91-133-5833.
Esta es La Hora Extra, con Richard Baugan.
Hello and welcome to the Extra Hour. Monday. Yes, my favorite, one of my favorite days. I have 7 favorite days, and it's hard to rank them as the favorite. As I've said many times, Saturday is my favorite day because it's always a holiday, and there's another holiday following, which is Sunday. And Friday is not my favorite day because it's a working day, of course. But it's my third favorite day. My favorite day is Saturday. My second favorite day is Sunday. My third favorite day is Friday, and my fourth favorite day is Monday, today. So today is my fourth favorite day. 4 out of 7 is not bad, eh? So, but in any case, Monday is coming to an end. It's coming to an end. Llegando a su fin. We say, viniendo a un fin. A un final. It's coming, it is. It's coming to an end. Monday is coming to an end. And this Monday, Monday the 5th, will never be the same again. We'll never have Monday the 5th of July again. Yes, yesterday was the 4th of July, Sunday. The Independence Day in the United States. We don't say Independence Day, even though there was a movie with Will Smith called Independence Day. When we refer to El Día de la Independencia Americana, which is el 4 de Julio, the 4th of July, we never say Independence Day, we say the 4th of July. That is the official name of the holiday, the 4th of July. And if you ask an American, I've said this many times on the radio, But if you want, si quieres tomar el pelo en americano, de risa, que se ría, you ask the American. It has to be an American, eh? Not Brit or Canadian, an American. And you say, excuse me, is there a 4th of July in England? And the American will instantly say, no, there isn't. And you say, okay, do you mean the calendar skips the day from the 3rd to the 5th? And the American will say, okay, yes, there is a 4th of July on the calendar in England. But there isn't a 4th of July. Because that's the title of the holiday. Yes, it's a bit like saying, I don't know. For example, in Mexico, the Independence Day is a Cinco de Mayo. Bueno, they have two Independence Days. One is the Cinco de Mayo. Say, ¿hay un Cinco de Mayo en España? They say, no. No hay un Cinco. Say, no celebra el Cinco de Mayo. No hay un Cinco de Mayo in España. But it's not true. The Spanish calendar includes May 5th. But a Mexican would momentarily, at least at first, say no. There isn't a 5th of May in Spain. Cinco de Mayo, no. However, the 5th of May is not the celebration of Spain's independence from Mexico. It's a celebration of Spain, of Mexico. ¿Qué dicho? Lo he dicho al revés. The 5th of May. You know, when you're talking on the radio, sometimes you don't realize you're saying something backwards because you're thinking ahead of yourself. The 5th of May is not in Mexico, is not the celebration of Mexican independence from Spain. It's a celebration of Mexican independence from France. Because the French and the Austrians, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but the French basically took control of the Mexican government for 4 years during the 1860s. And so I think the 5th of May is that. El Cinco de Mayo, ¿qué celebra? Let's see. The Cinco de Mayo, all right, the 5th of May is an annual celebration which commemorates the anniversary of Mexico's victory over the French Empire at the Battle of Puebla in 1862. Led by General Ignacio Zaragoza, the victory of a smaller, poorly equipped Mexican force against the larger and better armed French army was a morale boost for the Mexicans. All right. A larger French force ultimately defeated the Mexican army in the Second Battle of Puebla and occupied Mexico City. Cinco de Mayo, the Cinco de Mayo is sometimes mistaken for Mexico's Independence Day. Well, it's true, it's independence from the French. The most important national holiday in Mexico, which is celebrated on September 16th, commemorating the cry of Dolores. Será el grito de Dolores, no? I don't know. Let's see. Is it el grito de Dolores? Let me see if I can find it. Just a second. Maybe it's el grito. El grito de Dolores. No. Grito de Dolores. Es considerado con que dio inicio a la guerra de independencia de México contra España. All right. Dolores Hidalgo de Guanajuato. All right. Let's see. Según la tradición, consistió en la llamada que el cura Miguel Hidalgo, en compañía de Ignacio Allende y Juan Aldama, hizo a sus feligreses con el fin de que se levantaran en armas contra la Nueva España. La Nueva España, ok. Será de Pepe Botella, de José Bonaparte. En la mañana del 16 de septiembre de 1810. Ok. Para lo cual tocó en una de las campanas de la parroquia del pueblo de Dolores. Hoy se llama Dolores Hidalgo, pueblo de Guanajuato. All right, so there are two, the Independence Day in Mexico is considered September 16th. That's when the sacerdote de cura, Miguel Hidalgo, said to ring the bells. They were taking advantage of the fact that Spain was weak, very, very weak at that time. All of South America, all of the Spanish possessions in the New World, except Cuba and Puerto Rico, gained independence from Spain during that period of instability in Spain because of the Napoleonic invasion. Only the Philippines, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Guam, the island of Guam, remained as Spanish possessions until 1898, until the Spanish-American War. But the 5th of May is also independence from France. But it's not really the independence date from France, because the French later, this was the Bataille de Puebla, that the Mexicans won, but later they lost. The French occupied Mexico City and the poor Maximilian of Austria, the younger brother of Franz Joseph, became the emperor, the Mexican Empire, but it only lasted for about 4 years. And Benito Juarez and the Mexicans managed to win back Mexico. They captured Maximilian and they executed him in front of a firing squad. And he was a very nice man, Maximilian, very correct, very good person. And the Mexicans knew this, and Benito Juarez knew this, but it was necessary, in their opinion, to execute him as a symbol. It was not right to come from Europe and to usurp the powers. And that's what the French did with the help of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But really, the French did all the work. It was an idea of Louis Napoleon, y Eugenio de Montijo. Louis Napoleon was the French emperor he became the prime minister of France, or similar, the chancellor of France in 1849, 3 years later, in a coup d'etat, in a golpe de estado, auto golpe. He established himself as the emperor from 1852 to 1870. So for 18 years, he was the emperor of France. He was the nephew of Napoleon Bonaparte. Sobrino o Napoleon era su tío abuelo. I don't remember. Luis Napoleon. Napoleon. Let's see. Napoleon III, Bonaparte, Napoleon III, yes. Let's see. He was, Presidente de la Segunda República from 1848 to 1852, y posteriormente embajador, emperador franceses, from 1852 to 1870. All right. Hijo de Luis Bonaparte. Okay. Hijo de Luis Bonaparte, but I'm trying to get his connection to Napoleon. No. Debemos un parentesco con Napoleón Bonaparte, se convirtió. Luis Bonaparte, único príncipe francés, hermano del emperador Napoleón. So he was the sobrino. He was the nephew of Napoleón Bonaparte. And he married a Spanish woman by the name of Eugenia de Montijo. Let me see if I find her exact name. Let's see. Consorte Eugenia de Montijo. All right. Eugenia de Palafox, Porto Carrero y Kirkpatrick. Okay. O María Eugenia de Guzmán y Porto Carrero, más conocida como Eugenia de Montijo. She was born in Granada in 1826. She died in Madrid in 1920. Well, she lived a long, long life. Well, she lived 94 years or something like that. Incredible. Yes. She died at the age of 94 in Madrid. She was a widow for many, many years. But she and her husband were having a dinner or having a tea with Franz Joseph, Francisco José, of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and they began a brainstorming. Hey, what can we do? Well, the United States is having problems, and they're in a civil war. They don't have time to, let's invade Mexico, and your brother Maximilian can be the emperor and will control. Because they considered that the United States was going to have big, big problems. And they didn't. The United States was able at the same time to support Benito Juarez a little bit. And it only lasted 4 years. Interesting period of Mexican history. Eh? Interesting period. But let's go on, shall we? Usually you ask me questions. I'm waiting for some questions. Wow, you mean we haven't even started the class yet? No, we haven't started this English class yet. My God, you mean you've wasted 13 minutes? Well, I don't consider the last 13 minutes a waste of time. I was speaking English and talking about history, about Mexico, about holidays, the 4th of July, the 5th of May in Mexico, the 16th of September. Many of these things my listeners don't know, especially the 16th of September in Miguel Hidalgo, el sacerdote, in Guanajuato. All right. And they don't know these things, that there are two independence days. Well, the Cinco de Mayo is not an independence day, really, because they didn't gain independence, but it was the Battle of Puebla. And that's really, I think, the most important day during the year on the Mexican calendar. The 5th of May. My son was born on the 5th of May. Okay, but you can ask me questions now. I'm ready. All right. Have you ever borrowed money from a relative? No, I haven't. Do you usually wave goodbye with your right hand? Yes, I do. Is too much money spent on space travel and research? No, it's not. Do you try to hide your feelings from other people? No, I don't. Is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? Yes, it is. Did Julius Caesar refer to the years with the term B.C.? No, he didn't. What a silly question. Had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? No, he hadn't. Have you ever walked straight into a glass door? I think so, once, yeah. Yes, I have. Does rain cause erosion? Yes, it does. Are good leaders usually good communicators as well? Yes, they are. Usually. Have you ever borrowed money from a relative? No, I haven't. I've never borrowed money from anybody. Well, I borrowed money from my wife. Hey, can you give me 5 euros? I need to... no, I've never borrowed money from anybody. Oh, I borrowed money from banks. Yes. So it's not true. Yes, I have borrowed money. I don't have any debts now. I have paid off all my debts. I paid off. He pagado todas mis deudas. He saldado. To pay off is ir saldando. To pay off my debts. I mean, mortgages. I've never borrowed money to buy anything except a house. Now, I have bought... Well, I guess so. To buy my first car, I bought it on a financing plan. The Banco de Bilbao, I think. Or Banco de Vizcaya. Before the merger, I bought a Simca. 1200. I think it was 260,000 pesetas. I think it was 260,000 pesetas. Yes, that car. I bought it in 1978 in the summer. let's see, 260,000 pesetas divided by 166. So it was 1,600 euros, un poco menos. 1,600 euros el coche. That's how much it cost. I remember that. I think it was 270, to tell you the truth, to be honest. I think it was 270, well, let's say 275,000 pesetas divided by 166,386. It was 1,653 euros. The first car, I bought it in, I think in June or in July 1978. That was the first car I bought in Spain. The first car I bought in the States was 10 years before. But in any case, and I used it. It was a good car, and my mother-in-law took it and used it for another 25 years. My God, we got our money's worth out of that car. We got our money's worth out of that car. Sacamos el valor del dinero invertido de ese coche. Our money's worth. Worth como valor. Worth. It's worth it. It's not worth it. But usando money, con el genitivo sajón. This is an interesting expression. To get your money's worth. To get your money's worth means que el dinero rinda y que lo que compres valga tanto o más que el dinero que renuncias para comprarlo. To get your money's worth. Value for money. Value for money. It's a very common expression in marketing in the United States. Value for money. Your value proposition. They're changing the language. It's so silly. But nevertheless, value for money. To get your money's worth. And so that car, my God, we extracted every penny from that car. Because my mother-in-law used it until about 10 years ago. 1977 to 2007. What is that? 30 years? Or more using that car. Incredible. When 1978, excuse me. All right. So, have you ever borrowed money from a relative? De un pariente. No, I've never borrowed money from a relative. And we use the verb to borrow a lot in English. You don't have a verb in Spanish for borrow. You have tomar prestado, pedir prestado. To lend is prestar, but to borrow is the opposite. A lender and a borrower. A lender and a borrower. The bank usually is a lender and the individual is the borrower. And we use it so much that even little children use it. Little children, oye, me dejas tu lápiz un momento. Oye, Rafito, me dejas tu... See, can I borrow your pencil? Can I borrow... See? Can I borrow your pencil for a minute? I'll give it right back. Do you usually wave goodbye with your right hand? I don't know. I'm waving right now. I'm trying to figure out which hand I use to wave. To wave is saludar con la mano, bien normalmente despedida. Adiós. And you wave your hand. To wave. Wave is ondear una bandera. The flag is waving. To wave. But no, I've never... I'm right-handed. So probably I wave goodbye with my right hand more than with my left. But I've never stopped to observe which hand I'm using to wave with. That's a silly question. Let's go on to something a little more interesting. All right, is too much money spent on space travel and research? Excuse me? In your opinion, is too much money spent? Voz pasiva. Es demasiado dinero gastado. Así. O sea, se gasta. Is too much money spent on space travel and research? O sea, exploración espacial y investigación. Yes. Space travel. Bueno, viajes estelares. Oh, like Star Trek. Yes. Space travel. No. Too much money isn't spent on space travel and research. I'm in favor of it because it filters down. It creates greater wealth than it takes. It's profitable, in my opinion, in the long run, because it improves technologies. The idea of getting people to the moon in 10 years. John Kennedy in 1961 said, we will put a person on the moon, a man on the moon, before the next decade. And he was right. He didn't see it. He was assassinated 2 years later. But that's what he said, and that's what the United States achieved. And to achieve that, there were a lot of advances and progress made in technology, which filters into other areas of the economy and creates a lot of employment and a lot of... It's always a positive thing. I always use the case of Christopher Columbus when Christopher Columbus told his wife, darling, I got three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. I'm going to sail to India, sailing west. And who knows, maybe I'll discover a new world. And Christopher Columbus's wife said, hey, Chris, baby, come on. Why do you have to go off and discover new worlds? All this time and money spent for these ships and these voyages, that money can be used here. There's so many people who are still poor. And Christopher Columbus said to his wife, yes, darling, you're right. But if we don't discover new worlds, we will not progress, etc. And Christopher Columbus was right. Richard, did that conversation really take place? No. Oh, who knows? Maybe it did, but I doubt it. But by exploring, that's part of human nature. That's the noble desire of the human mind to know what's on the other side of the mountain. You know, to go. Like the bear that went over the mountain to see what he can see. The other side of the mountain was all that he could see. Okay. But in any case, until you go to the top of the mountain, you will never know what's on the other side. You have to go and climb the mountain. Otherwise, you could be missing something very, very interesting and very lucrative, maybe, or very progressive for everybody. So I defend the money that has been spent and continues to be spent on space travel and research. And with this statement or this opinion, I will make a discreet exit for this first half hour, but promising to be right back.
Ahora tu profesor Vaughan desde tu casa, la oficina. Tu profesor Vaughan en clases telefónicas. Ahora más fácil y cómodo. Consigue uno de los tres planes de formación en grupovaughan.com/clases telefónicas.
Nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia es la opción perfecta para perfeccionar tu inglés en poco tiempo y sin perder tiempo en incómodos desplazamientos. 100% online, por videoconferencia, desde cualquier lugar. Grupos de 6 personas como máximo. Horario de mañana o tarde. Prueba de nivel gratuita. ¿Qué más quieres? Nosotros no podemos darte más facilidades. Ahora te toca a ti. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate sobre nuestro curso de inglés por videoconferencia.
Haz una pausa y disfruta. Mejorando, Aprendiendo con tu curso trimestral por videoconferencia. Con todo el dinamismo e intensidad de una clase Vaughan en una plataforma rápida y de fácil instalación. Por fin llega tu mejor momento del día. Cursos trimestrales por videoconferencia. Haz tu reserva en el 911-133-5833. 911-133-5833.
Mucha gente nos pregunta si es posible que un método online para aprender inglés funcione de verdad. Hoy en nuestro especial Vaughan Key Points hablamos de este tema con nuestro profesor y director de innovación, Richard Brown.
La clave de nuestro método online es la motivación. Hemos diseñado un curso que realmente engancha en cada nivel, te motiva y reta para que avances de nivel. Pero la verdadera clave son los profesores Vaughan. Su método de enseñanza es lo que realmente nos diferencia. Los cursos online Vaughan cuentan con los mismos profesores apasionados que desde hace más de 40 años nos han hecho diferentes. Descubre las ventajas de nuestro método online probándolo. Así que os invito a entrar en grupovaughan.com y poneros a prueba.
¿Quieres recibir clase conmigo? Pues si quieres, tienes 200 horas de clase de inglés gratis en RTV a la carta. Ve a Google y escribe Vaughan RTV a la carta. Y presto, ahí verás más de 370 clases de media hora y cada día se añade una más. Desde principiante hasta avanzado, te llevo por todo lo necesario de mi idioma. Píldoras potentes de inglés. También hay libros de texto que acompañan al curso, pero son opcionales. Con o sin ellos, aprenderás mucho inglés o mejorarás mucho tu dominio. Pruébalo en Google. Vaughan RTV a la carta. Ahí nos veremos.
Lo que más miedo da al profesional español es hablar por teléfono en inglés. Por eso Vaughan ha desarrollado las clases telefónicas, en las que trabajarás tanto tu comprensión auditiva como tu fluidez oral con un auténtico crack de la enseñanza. Tú eliges la hora y la temática de cada clase. Flexibilidad absoluta. Calidad Vaughan 100%. Contrata las clases telefónicas de inglés de Vaughan para tu empresa. Llama al 911-335-831 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
¿Quieres apuntarte a un curso de inglés y no sabes cuál escoger? ¿Por qué no pruebas nuestro curso trimestral de Vaughan? Son solo 3 meses, no pierdes nada y te aseguramos que vas a ganar mucho. 3 meses en los que podrás ver cuál es tu nivel real de inglés. 3 meses en los que trabajarás tu listening y speaking en todo momento. 3 meses en los que subirás ese nivel tanto que, pues, que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupovaughan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Vaughan.
Extra con Richard Vaughan.
Hello, welcome back. Okay, we're back for our second half hour of today's Monday edition of Richard Vaughan Live. No. The extra hour. Sometimes I get mixed up. Sometimes I get mixed up. Fonética, mixed up. Mixed up. Mostafa. All right, sometimes I get mixed up. So welcome to the second half hour of the extra hour, Monday's edition, 10:30 at night. Question, do you try to hide your feelings from other people? No, I don't. Is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? Yes, it is. Did Julius Caesar refer to the years with the term B.C.? No, he didn't. Had Hitler already occupied Great Britain by the time the U.S. entered the war? No, he hadn't. Have you ever walked straight into a glass door? I think so, once. Does rain cause erosion? Yes, it does. Are good leaders usually good communicators as well? Yes, they are. Has there ever been an earthquake in the news? Well, has there been, perdona, quítale ever. Has there been an earthquake in the news this week? No, there hasn't, as far as I know. Can you see the horizon if you're in the middle of a forest? No, I can't. Can you afford a new house right now? Yeah, if I sell this one. Yeah, I can afford a new house if I sell my current house. Yes, yeah, no problem. In fact, I can probably make money because I can sell this one and move down. I don't need as much space anymore, so I can move into a smaller flat. So, yeah, I can afford a new house right now, but I'm not going to buy one. All right, let's go back. Do you try to hide your feelings from other people? No, I don't. Do you try to hide, esconder, o en este caso, ocultar tus sentimientos? Do you try to hide your feelings from other people? ¿Qué es from other? Es fromage, fromaggio, from other. Ah, from other. De otras personas. Yeah, we say from. To hide something from. ¿Me estás ocultando algo en inglés? Is you're hiding something from me. From. All right. No quieres que me llegue. You're keeping it from me. You're hiding it from me. So, to hide your feelings from other people. Fíjate cómo uso la M de trampolín hace la O de other. From other. From other. From other people. Samantha. From other. From other. Fromage. From other. Do you try to hide your feelings from other people? No, I don't. I carry my feelings on my sleeve. Not true. But no, I'm not a person. I don't hide my feelings from other people. I mean, other people, I don't give away my feelings right and left. I mean, to people whom I know and appreciate, I don't hide my feelings. And I don't try to hide my feelings from other people. From other people. Is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You know, I wonder, you know, if we take this question, Rio de Janeiro. Imagine we take this question to the second year bachillerato, baccalaureate, second year. The kids are 17 and 18 years old in their second year. And you ask that question, yes or no? Is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? I wonder what percentage of these baccalaureate students would answer yes. I would say probably 70%, but 30% would say no. Well, it depends, because some people who don't know would guess. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, pinto, pinto, gorgorito. I mean, even a chimpanzee has a 50-50 chance of getting it right. You know, if you give a chimpanzee a pencil to put an X or a mark in the box, yes or no, the chimpanzee's going to be correct 50% of the time. So, you know, I wonder if your answer is more correct than a chimpanzee's. So, is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? You know, these questions about simple geography can sometimes be surprising and absolutely disheartening when you realize how ignorant people are. But everywhere, this is a case, you go anywhere. You can go to the University of Munich and ask certain questions about geography or about basic history, and most people are totally ignorant. They do this in California, in Los Angeles. I remember, what was his name? Jay Leno. A late night host similar to Andrés Buenafuente. Sí, anfitrión de la noche en programas de ese tipo. We say late night host. Sometimes, once a week, he went out to the streets of Los Angeles with a cameraman and he asked questions. But very, very basic questions. Who was the first president of the United States? And many people say Abraham Lincoln or John Kennedy or some completely strange answer. You know, probably what they do, I mean, I'm sure many people give them the correct answer, but those people are not included later on the program in the film, when they show the film. But I would love to go into the baccalaureate or into a Spanish university, American university. It's the same. The ignorance is the same everywhere. With a map of the world, with the perfect outline of every country. And I would ask, okay, please mark or write the name of the country for Finland, Syria, Nepal, Taiwan, and maybe, I don't know, Guatemala and Paraguay. And to see, you know, how many students of the second year of the baccalaureate get 100% right. And they can go to the map of the world with the countries, but not the names of the countries inside. And they have to put the names of Syria, Finland, Guatemala, can't teach you Paraguay, ¿qué más he dicho? Paraguay, Nepal, and I said one more, I can't remember, to identify countries around the world. Very simple geography. Of course, Nepal is a very small country. Well, very small. It's smaller than Spain, but it's a relatively long country. I really don't know how big Nepal is. Neither in population nor population 29 million. So Nepal is big in population, not as big as Spain, but it's bigger than the Netherlands and bigger than most countries in Europe. So it's an important country. And in size, Nepal is, ¿dónde está? Where does it say? The capital is Kathmandu, superficie, 148,000 square kilometers. So it's about one third the size of Spain. One third the size. So probably the size of Austria or something like that. Nepal. Now, and then to find Paraguay, to find Guatemala, to find Taiwan. I forgot Taiwan. That would be probably difficult for most. I would bet that very, very few, maybe less than 5%, would get all of them, would be able to identify all of them on the world map. You never know. So that's ignorance in geography, but that's common. And ignorance in history, there's so much ignorance about that with people. But it doesn't matter because it's been that way throughout history. In fact, if you go back 200 years, people were ignorant about what is in the next province. So even though nowadays we think people are ignorant, people are much more knowledgeable now than 200 years ago, or even 100 years ago, I think. All right, but let's go on. Is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? Yes, it is. It's on the Atlantic coast of Brazil, in the southern hemisphere. It's the second largest city in Brazil after Sao Paulo. And the third largest city, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's Salvador de Bahia. But I don't think so. It could be. Let's book ranking Brazilian cities by population. All right. Let's find out. Sao Paulo is the biggest with 12 million. This is Terminal Municipal. Rio de Janeiro is second with 7 million. Third is Brasilia, the capital, with 3 million. Fourth is Salvador de Bahia, yes, with 3 million. And then Fortaleza with 2.7 million. Belo Horizonte with 2.5. Oof, a lot of people. And then Manaus. 2.3 million people in Manaus. And Manaus is located on the Amazon River. Wow. That's a very, very humid. Wow. I've never been there. I've never been there. I'm going to pull out Manaus, pictures of Manaus, to see that city, the pictures. It looks pretty, yes. But I imagine it's extremely humid. It looks like, let's see, Manaus. Let's find Manaus on the map, because I could be confusing it. Manaus on the map. All right, let's see. I think it's right on the Amazon River. Yes. Yes, sir. Manaus. It's right on the equator as well, right on the Amazon River. Manaus. But if you look at pictures, it looks pretty, eh? To tell you the truth, it looks nice. I wonder what the average humidity is and the average temperatures. Can you imagine the mosquitoes and things you have in Manaus? Maybe not. Let's find out. Let's find out. All right, Manaus. I want to find out the temperatures of Manaus. The average temperatures. English version of Wikipedia. What would I do without Wikipedia? Let's see. The average high during the entire year, that's interesting. In January, 31 degrees is the average high. And in July, or in August, 33 degrees. So the average high during the afternoon is between 31 degrees and 33 degrees. It never changes. The average low, which would be at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, is between 21 to 23 degrees. It's 23 degrees all year. Yeah. Now, the record low, this is interesting. La temperatura más baja jamás registrada in Manaus was 12 degrees. I don't know when, but that's the record. 12 degrees. And the record high was 38 degrees. So it doesn't get as hot as it does in Madrid, for example. And it's on the equator. Now, average days of precipitation. Okay. In which it's raining. Well, in January, February, and March, 19 days. In April, 19 days. The driest month of the year is September, in which it rains on the average, como promedio, on the average, it rains on the average 6 days a month. 6 days a month. All right. It's very humid, I imagine. Average relative humidity. All right, the humidity is always the driest month of the year in terms of humidity is August, and the average relative humidity is 77%. So it's humid. It's humid, and the worst month is, let's see, is January. Nope, the worst month is March. 86.9, 87% humidity. So, you need to take a shower often. And the Amazon River looks like a sea. It's very, very big. 2.5 million people live there, man. It's a lot of people. You know, I wonder what the economy... Manaus is the sixth largest economy in Brazil. All right. It has a gross city product, Productos Municipal Bruto, o sea, Bruto Interior Bruto de Ciudad, of $67 billion, man. That's a lot. All right. The per capita income is $33,000. It's more than here. The people in Manaus are richer than in Spain. In Manaus, on the Amazon. I wonder why that is. Let's see what the average... What is the income per capita? Income per capita, Madrid. Let's look at Madrid. The income per capita in Madrid is 35,000. Let's see. All right, it says, en cuanto al PIB per capita en Madrid, fue de 35, that's a Producto Interior Bruto per capita. That's a bit different from income per capita, but nevertheless. So it's slightly bigger. Madrid is slightly richer than Manaus. All right. Now, Nokia, Samsung, there are a lot of mobile telephone companies with plantas de fabricación there. Airline companies are based there, and so it's a bustling city. All right, Manaus. In fact, during the recent, about five years ago or 6 years ago, they had the World Cup in Brazil, and they played in Manaus. I think Spain played in Manaus. I'm not sure. It is very, very humid. But let's go on, shall we? More questions. So your question was, is Rio de Janeiro on the Atlantic? Yes, it is. Question number three, did Julius Caesar refer to the years with the term B.C.? Of course not, dummy. Dummy means tonto. Why do you ask that question? You know, I said in a class about 40 years ago, I said, a friend of mine by the name of Frochoso, you know, Rafael Frochoso, found a coin near Calatayud, El Antiguo Bilbilis, and it said 43 BC. It was dated 43 BC. And my students apparently didn't understand my English or said, oh, really? That's interesting. Of course, it's impossible to find a coin dated 43 BC because the people in 43 BC didn't know that Jesus of Nazareth was going to be born and become the Christ for Christianity. So Julius Caesar didn't refer to the years with the term B.C. I mean, he said, friends, Romans, countrymen, now in the year 45 B.C. Okay, no. We refer to it because we use the Christian calendar. Many people are changing from saying B.C. and A.D., Antes de Cristo y Anno Domini, AD, Año de Nuestro Señor. They're changing it to say BCE and CE. BCE stands for before the common era. Antes la era común. Before the common era, BCE. And CE means era común, common era. And so but still we use the birth of Jesus of Nazareth all over the world, really. I mean, the Chinese have their calendar. And I imagine the Japanese and other cultures have their own calendars. But in international relations, international business, international finance, geopolitics, everything, it's the birth of Jesus of Nazareth that is the most important point in terms of the calendar on the planet Earth. My God, he's having a big influence on our lives, isn't he? That man who only for 3 years performed his mission and changed the world. Although I don't think he changed it. I think Paul changed it, the Apostle Paul. Because for me, without the Apostle Paul, Christianity never would have taken root in the Eastern Mediterranean. The Eastern Mediterranean was Greek culturally, and they spoke Greek. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, spoke Greek and Latin and Hebrew and Aramaic. And he was transformed on the way to Damascus, converted, And he took the Christian concept to the Greek world because he was a Roman citizen. Even though he was a Jew, he was from Tarsus, and his family was a upper class family in Tarsus, and they had won Roman citizenship, so he was able to travel, and he traveled to the Greek world, to Asia Minor, the Greek cities of Asia Minor, then to Thessalonica, to Athens, to Corinth, finally to Rome. And he visited Halicarnassus and Ephesus and other places, preaching the concept of Christianity to the Greek world. And the Greek world, in many ways, began to accept it. They liked it. And because it was necessary, a replacement for the Greek myths and the mystery religions was necessary. And it was a single god, not the multiple gods of Olympus. And so they warmed to this idea. But then they Hellenized Christianity quite a bit. Even the concept of resurrection is a Greek concept. It's not a Jewish concept. And in the Greek mystery religions, the concept of resurrection existed 300 years before the development, before the beginning of Christianity. And other things. The Trinity, adding three gods instead of just one. The Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then many more things. The angels and all these things were easier for the Greek palate, el paladar griego, heleno, than it was for the Jewish. And then the city of Alexandria in northern Egypt, which was predominantly full of Jews and full of Greeks, adopted very quickly the concept of Christianity, and it grew from there. So he just had some good disciples, especially Paul, who wasn't a direct disciple. He wasn't one of the 12 original apostles. It's interesting, fascinating. So did Julius Caesar refer to the year